Anyone can tell you the news.
Blue-Lock Gum, Diamond and Silk.
Mark Zuckerberg will end up and it's going to be a face without the book.
Without the face.
Hey, Megan, how are you?
Now they're chipping away at the normalization of pedophilia. And the left is embracing this type of behavior.
Blue-Lock Gum, Dinesh D'Souza.
I know I ticked him off. In a certain sense, it's a giant up yours to Obama. And that's why the left is freaking out over it.
Jack Kennedy and LBJ, Clinton, and the double standard from the left.
Yeah, I love how the left does nothing but push the most bizarre practices down our throats and up our tailpipes.
It takes a real man to tackle the hot issues that really matter.
Michael Hart is the man of this house.
Welcome to the Michael Hart Show.
September 2019, and you're listening to the Michael Hart Show right here, the Heart of America Broadcasting Network. We are together again. This broadcast brought to you by the Unknown America Project. Go over to theunknownamerica.com, theunknownamerica.com for everything unknown in America. Also, our friends over at Liberty One Tech, libertythenumberonetech.com, libertythenumberonetech.com. And, of course, our friends over at the Land Report for all of your, your land-loving needs. If you love land, it's the magazine for you. So much to talk about today. Today is America's 51st State Edition. That's right. There is a move afoot that will actually begin on Thursday, as discussions not about Puerto Rico, but discussions about the possibility of Washington, D.C. being turned into a state. The House Oversight and Reform Committee is scheduled to hold a hearing, initially scheduled for July, on a bill proposing statehood for D.C. The bill seeks to have the city admitted to the Union on equal footing with the other states. What does the attempt wise? We're going to take a look. Also, the other hot news of the day, your calls, and this day in history. When the time is right, and this ain't it, 929-477-3761. So much to talk about. Obviously, we were not live yesterday, but pretty much the continuing soap opera that is American politics continues on as new allegations against Brett Kavanaugh, then refuted allegations, the 2020 still jumping on board, so much of the same each and every day. Also, interesting news from California as they add another state to their travel ban list over, transitioning. Marianne Williamson calling out Democrats as well. So there's an awful lot to get into today. But I guess at the end of the day, what's really caught my attention is the continuing discussions about Kavanaugh impeachment, Trump, et cetera, and the derangement which grasped the nation. And it's comical, and it's to the point. And one of the reasons, just so you know, that I've done, taken a little bit of time here and a little bit of time there, it's actually twofold reason. Reason number one is that we're trying to get the final formatting done on the children's version of the book. I'd like to also have Unknown America 2 ready for Christmas time, and writing the book is a real pain in the backside. But in addition to that, there's also the issue of not having a whole lot more to report on in the country, as the level of vitriol and consternation from the left continues unabated, and it is. It's really been nothing more than a meme generator. And of course, Beto O'Rourke and, we're coming to take you away, ha 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 ho, to the funny farm where your guns will be bought back. Now, Kamala Harris has jumped on board with that as well. And you see other 2020 hopefuls that are doing much of the exact same thing. And it has become almost unabashedly comical for what we're seeing taking place in this nation today. And some days I'm just like, what is the point? So we'll continue to break it down. But at the end of the day, it really is nothing more than a continuation of what is, derangement. However, this day in history, today is a very significant day in American history, as it was on this date in 1787 that the Constitution is signed in Philadelphia. Also on this particular date, taking a run all the way up to 1849, American abolitionist Harriet Tubman escapes from slavery. Also, 1859, Joshua A. Norton declares himself Norton the First, Emperor of the United States. Maybe we'll get to that a little bit later on, but maybe not. 1862, George McClellan, Union General McClellan, halts the northward drive of Robert E. Lee's Confederate Army in the single-day Battle of Antietam, the bloodiest day in American military history. Also on this date, something that we pretty much dispute in the book, Unknown America, 1908, the Wright Flyer, flown by Orville Wright with Lieutenant Thomas Selfridge as a passenger, crashes, killing Selfridge, who becomes the first airplane fatality on this particular date. And we have pretty much debunked the myth of the Wright brothers, as we do in so many pieces of American history in the book, because at the end of the day, well, pretty much everything you think you know about American history is incorrect. And it's so fascinating when you consider so many of the things that are going on in terms of the past. And, you know, it's like the calls by Beto O'Rourke, coming to get your ARs, coming to get your AKs, et cetera. And then you look at O'Rourke's past. And when we talk about the past of this nation, we are not necessarily talking about American history from like what we just did back in the 1870s or even the 1800s. You know, you're talking about history as it relates yesterday and the day before and perhaps 6 months ago. But the channel Hillary Clinton, what difference does it make at this point anyway? Well, it does make a difference. And now it would seem that O'Rourke in particular sees the writing on the wall and realizes that he does not have much of a political future, as so much of his past has continued to haunt him. But this has not stopped, well, so many of the Democrats from coming out and screaming at the top of their lungs about new allegations leveled against Brett Kavanaugh, allegations that the New York Times has backtracked from, and yet they continue to double down. A couple of days ago, I'm having a conversation with some folks and talking about how the character assassination that is prevalent in this country is what is really driving American politics. And you simply cannot escape it. As a matter of fact, it was on the Igniting the Nation broadcast network. I was on the air with Rabbi Eric Walker. And by the way, if you did not see that interview, later today, we'll post it up to the YouTube channel, Heart of America. And we invite you to go over there and check that out. But just talking about the character assassination of what's going on with so many of the candidates, as well as the justices in this particular situation. But during the conversation, Walker was asking me about why this particular administration and this particular bench, referring to the Supreme Court, pardon me, seems to have caught the attention of the Democrats. And my observation on that was, we have to bear in mind that there are some administrations that don't have any Supreme Court appointees, or in this case, nominees. And in the case of Trump, he has the capacity to completely reframe the Supreme Court for years, if not decades to come. And that's one of the reasons for going after the Kavanaughs of the world, because they can't get Trump. I mean, even Jared Nadler has come out and basically, you know, said, hey, you know, we're going to continue on with our committee investigations, but much of what we're hearing is folly. So when you consider Nadler's comments and impeachment comments and things going on related to Kavanaugh and then the gun buybacks and Kamala Harris and everybody piling on, I'm, you know, an observation that I, you know, I didn't say it publicly, but I will now. You've really got to be quite ignorant to be a Democrat. Now, I mean, I'm sorry. It's out there. And I don't mean necessarily that you're not smart in what you do, but ignorant of the political facts. And if I was a Democrat or an independent or a political agnostic, as our friend Gerald Celente of the Trends Report has often referred to himself, I would be quite concerned with what is going on in the nation around us today. Now, today's broadcast is America's 51st State Edition, as 51-star American flags are being lined up in Pennsylvania Avenue. And I'm not going to get into that right at the moment, but I think it's very important to realize that, you know, you've got this wholesale move afoot in this country to literally redesign the nation in the model of socialist Europe. And we are going to get a little bit into the history of why America has a district as opposed to making Washington, D.C. a state, and the folly of such an idea. But it goes yet again to fully exploit and explore the mindset of the liberal left, who now, on the heels of O'Rourke's comments, pardon me, has pretty much demonstrated that they are as progressive as we have often thought. And the truth, quite frankly, be damned. Democrats running for president, who quickly called for Kavanaugh's impeachment over the weekend, are not backing down, despite the New York Times issuing a major revision to the story that ignited the demands in the first place. Now, for those of you that are outside the state of Alabama, you probably are not fully up to speed with the Senate special election, where something similar was done with Judge Roy Moore. We have got to, in this country, embrace a level of concern about the future, and beyond just constitutional future. I'm talking about the future of the political narrative and what is considered to be a legitimate political strategy. Now, anybody that is a student of history would know that what we're seeing in terms of the accusations and allegations against Kavanaugh, Trump, etc., these are not new. Almost every presidential candidate, going all the way back to Jefferson, but it got really bad when Lincoln was running, has been on the receiving end of allegations and crass reporting and political cartoons, etc., etc. But in the days of social media, which I frankly believe is going to be the undoing of this nation, it seems to have become, pardon the expression, progressively worse. Now, for the most part, these candidates, the 2020s, are not even acknowledging the story update. Meanwhile, as I pointed out, Jared Nadler, the leader of the House Judiciary Committee, seemed to brush off his party's call to begin proceedings against Kavanaugh. I guess Nadler's along the lines of one impeachment at a time. Now, on a radio show that he appeared on yesterday, we have our hands full with impeaching the president right now. But impeachment, it's in. It's trendy. It's what you do when you don't have a platform. You do everything in your power to vanquish your enemy. And I really, maybe it's just that I have this personal inability to understand the position or the idea of eliminating your competition at all costs in lieu of a policy or a platform that is winnable. As a football fan, you know, I've had friends over the years, and I'll just go a little bit local on you. You know, the University of Alabama is arguably one of the most dominant football teams in American football history, certainly in the last several years. And I've had friends of mine that are on the opposite side that have decried the level of talent that appears on that team. If only we could get rid of Jalen Hurts, if only we could get rid of Tua, for example. You know, we need to get rid of these guys so we can whip Alabama. No. You want to win on your own terms. The idea of vanquishing your enemy to give you a better playing field, I don't ascribe to that idea. And maybe that's, I don't know, maybe it's one of the reasons that I have an issue with stories such as this. When I look at the Kavanaughs of the world, and where's the valor, where's the honor, where's the success in having such an enormous amount of desperation that you would rather remove the personnel that you cannot overcome with the hopes of being able to overthrow, or in the case of Auburn or Alabama, win, because you cannot beat the current roster of players. And then I feel like something is very similar in what we're seeing in D.C., that we have to malign the talent and the contributions of those in office because we can't beat them, at least from the perspective of the progressives. Now, many of the major 2020 Democrat candidates for president over the weekend released statements calling for Congress to impeach Kavanaugh, citing the Times report that has now been, well, uncorroborated and disputed of college-era allegations of sexual misconduct as a reason to impeach. Now, we can have the conversation of if there's a historic line of demarcation where things no longer matter. I know we can make the argument that people change, people grow up, people whatever. But in the case of Kavanaugh, it is simply not true. And, you know, looking back even at the adoption of the nuclear option and how the Democrats were so quick to employ it, and I screamed and screeched on the air that any power that the Congress gave itself under one administration, the next administration would maintain. And then all of a sudden, here we have Trump get elected and the employment of this strategy, and the Democrats are screaming bloody murder. The reason I bring this up is because if the future of politics is going to be nothing more than besmirching the character of people that want to run, or in this case be nominated, what does that speak about the future of this country? And I don't mean just from a behavioral perspective, but from a candidacy perspective, where we're no longer able to attract the best and the brightest, the honest and the most forthright, out of fear of personal excoriation and harassment of our families. Sunday, the Times, the same organization that has given us the 1619 report, which, by the way, I've not forgotten about, it'll be over to the YouTube channel almost any day now. I'm really going out of my way to get my facts straight about that, which is why I've yet to release it. But the paper revised its blockbuster story to include the fact that several friends of the alleged victim said she told them she did not recall the reported sexual assault in question. So what is it all about? Because it kind of goes to the Biden comment of truth versus facts. Well, you can't change facts, but you certainly can influence truth, can you not? According to Steny Hoyer, if the way to get the truth is to launch an impeachment process, pardon me, for justice for Kavanaugh, I support starting that process immediately. Now, Fox News has reached out to Democrats who called for impeachment over the weekend to ask if the candidates have changed their position in light of the newspaper's editor's notes, and none have responded yet. Kamie Harris said over the weekend that Kavanaugh, quote, must be impeached, and she did not back down in a new tweet Monday, saying the reality of Kavanaugh's confirmation process is that it lacked any integrity. Okay. I don't even know what that means. They investigated and investigated and investigated some more. They excoriated this guy. They did everything in their power during the confirmation process to bork this guy out of existence. And it didn't stick because there's nothing there. So how can, as a Democrat, how can somebody rightfully or willfully vote in a progressive sense, knowing that you're being lied to. Now, I want to stop right there and kind of shift gears entirely and looking at things like the 1619 Project. There are so many things, and one of the problems that I'm having is the fact that slavery was horrific. It was brutal. It was unfair. It was atrocious on so many different levels. But there are aspects and significant aspects of the reporting that are woefully incorrect. The founding of America, for example, in 1619 as one, or 1609 when Jamestown was founded. The reason I bring this up is that the Democrats, through Kavanaugh, are demonstrating to their voters that the facts don't matter, just your version of the truth. And I have done several interviews where I've seen comments pop up after the interview was done related to 1619, where people are making claims about things that I said that I didn't say. This leads me to believe, amongst other things, that they are unwilling to listen or unable or whatever to listen to the entire interview in its entirety. And I'm very concerned from a political perspective that so many people in this country today are unwilling to do their due diligence and face the realities of truth, or in this case, facts. If we can believe the allegations against Brett Kavanaugh, despite the fact that they have been refuted time and time and time again, then that makes it quite easy to believe anything that you hear, for example, on the 1619 report, amongst other things. The facts and the truth don't matter. Just a political party or organization that we happen to agree with this version of them. To what purpose? To what purpose does that serve us? What is it? And I'm just going to ask the question. What is it about truth and reality that people are so afraid of? I think it's a viable question. It goes over to the gun debate. It goes over to assault rifles, which don't exist. I'm so tired of the gun debate. To me, it feels like a waste of time. Because frankly, number one, it's settled. And number two, the anti-gun argument is predicated on a complete string of falsehoods. So what do we do with this? What do we do about it? How have we come to a point where so many Americans are willing to be deluded? I mean, is it the fluoride in the water? Is it the opioid epidemic? Is it the complete hyperpartisanism or prejudice? I mean, what is it? There are certain stories, and the 1619 video is one of them. It's a great example. And even the release of Unknown America 2. If you were in this studio right now, which is in my home, I have a desk set up, my microphones, my computer. But on the other side of this desk, facing back my direction, is a rather large table. On that table are stacks of files and news stories and just entries into Unknown America, or the future book anyway. And they have these little placards set up. One of them says researched. One says needing more research. Another one says needs clarification and context. The point is that I look at this stuff and I read it and I read it and I read it again. And I research it, and I double research it, sometimes things just don't make the cut. And it's not even because they're probably not true. It's because I can't prove them. Because I do make some allegations in the first book to some people. It's entertaining. It's fun. It's funny. It's got a lot of trivia in it. But I also make some allegations that might be disturbing to some people. But I think the truth deserves that. But then again, in a world where so many people dismiss the truth of the Lord Jesus Christ, why can I? How do I have the right to be surprised? When you've got centuries and centuries and centuries of evidence. But it's kind of like, you know, and then we'll get to some calls, but it's kind of like this notion that God is a vending machine. And we pray, more money, better health, faster cars, whatever. And we don't get it, and we become disappointed. But perhaps something even worse happens, and a child becomes ill, or an accident takes place. And people run off and they begin their prayer and they hit their knees and they beg and they implore. But yet the worst happens. And so many people in this world would use that as proof positive that because my prayer was not answered in a manner in which I felt that it should be, that the Lord cannot exist. See, I prayed, how can we have hunger in this country? How can we have despotic governments and torture and mayhem and human trafficking? Well, the short answer to that is God rules the heavens, the devil rules the earth. But it's a fair question for those that do not understand the foundations of faith. But I think there's so many people in this country that look to that, they have a situation. They ask for a resolution from the Heavenly Father. It does not come in the form they wish it does. And then they use that as justification of a non-existent God. How can this be? It makes perfect sense to me that it should work this way. So where is he? Well, again, the long and short of it is that the Lord is more concerned with your soul, your eternal soul, than your earthly body. But I won't get into that today. But we do something politically similar. We adopt these notions and these ideas that it should be this way. And then when it's not that way, we choose to believe a different set of rules. In the case of the metaphor with the Lord, we simply become an atheist. Well, politically speaking, atheism is progressivism. It didn't work out for me as a conservative or an independent. So I obviously must be an atheist or a progressive or a liberal or a socialist. And under that situation, anything is possible. We are constantly looking for things to shore up our viewpoints. And too many people in this country, and they vote, don't take the time to vet the information out, to get to the truth, to get to the facts, because it can be painful. Just like the knowledge from time to time from the Lord that sometimes understanding the answer to your prayer could be no, and it's painful. I think we have an issue in this country of people that are unable or unwilling to cope with the world around them. It can't be the human condition, so it must be guns. We want to abort our children, so we must attack those that might stand in the defiance of it. Because after all, abortion is a form of birth control. And it's a right. It's her body. It's not mine. Motivational speaker Tony Robbins used to always say that the quality of our lives does not come down to the quality of answers that we get. It comes down to the quality of questions that we ask. And too many people in this country are not asking the right questions. So yet again, we get this situation in this country where we're going to make up our own facts to support a notion that we believe, that we're predisposed to believe out of our prejudices and hatreds. And you've got political candidates that want to be the leader of the free world, that are willing to lie and mislead you for a vote. And these are the people that you want to consider standing up to the Chinese or the Russians or the Koreans. Donald Trump is not a perfect man, but this way, the 2020 hopefuls is nothing short of dangerous, and the people that would support him, even more so. Hello, Clark. How are you?
Hey, Michael. I'm doing well. And yourself?
Just fantastical.
Good deal. So, on the Kavanaugh thing, you know, let's back up for half a second, because you had Christine Blasey Ford write a letter to Dianne Feinstein, who referred her to Deborah Katz. And anybody that's not familiar with her history needs to look that up. And then you had Michael, is it Blomwich? Am I saying that right? Was the other person that was representing?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And what's his history? He's been a Democrat operative pretty much his entire adult life, right?
Right.
And here recently we've had Deborah Katz come out and just, I don't know if she let it slip or wanted to announce, but she stated that, you know, basically the whole Blasey Ford thing was laying foundations to delegitimize any new ruling on Roe v. Wade. You know, the mainstream media has never talked about any of that. I do think the reason that this is coming out right now is, you know, they've gotten into such a habit of projecting, and you can figure out what they're thinking about by what they're talking about. And they are terrified at the prospect of Donald Trump getting a third Supreme Court pick when Ruth Bader Ginsburg can no longer serve. And I think that's what brings this up now. I don't know. What do you think?
I completely agree. Because, you know, I was talking to Eric Walker about it yesterday on the Igniting a Nation broadcast. And I don't think people realize how rare it is for any president to get a Supreme Court nomination, let alone two, maybe three.
Yeah, and that just, I think they're scared to death of that. Hey, Michael, when we talked, I think it was on Thursday, we were pretty much in total agreement that in 2016, the DNC had rigged the process so that Hillary got the nomination regardless of the will of the Democrat voters, correct?
Correct.
All right, now, I haven't heard this from anybody else. But now these same people want to eliminate our Electoral College in order that every vote may count. I don't know, is the right word irony or hypocrisy there?
I think you can employ either one of them.
Maybe it's ironic hypocrisy. Oh,
there you go.
But I mean, you know, wow. Every vote needs to count, y'all. And look at what y'all did with superdelegates in 2016. Now, you eliminate the Electoral College. Reckon how they can figure out how to rig it up once that's gone. Because they'll figure a way. And, you know, we can move forward with the rigging that process. And just let's look at the Felicity Huffman sentencing. I think we've gotten to the point, Michael. You remember how, like, with the Spartans, when the Spartan boys went into training, they were expected to steal. And if they got caught stealing, they were punished for getting caught, not for stealing.
Right.
I think the left so expects to rig and cheat and manipulate that when one of them gets caught, it's not bad that they did it. It's bad that they got caught.
Right.
And you should have been better at this. And I don't know. And then the last thing I was mulling over the weekend, And you haven't heard much about McCabe the last, oh, I don't know, 3 or 4 days. Kind of been quiet on him for a few days. But, you know, the deal with the appeal, and, okay, McCabe's lawyers were talking to prosecutors, what, a month ago? Now, I can see where McCabe's lawyers would want to talk to prosecutors just to find out what they had, where they were, what they were thinking, right? But there's only one reason I can think of why prosecutors would want to talk with McCabe's lawyers. And that's because they were talking some kind of deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's all I can come up with. Well, they haven't made a deal. And they turned down his appeal to not prosecute, which had to involve some kind of cooperation. Now, there's only two things that I can think of that could be reasons why they didn't make a deal. Number one, they don't need what he has. They've got enough on everybody else they want stuff on that they don't need McCabe's cooperation. And the next one is the one that scares me. And that's they're going to end this with McCabe, and they don't want to climb a ladder, and therefore they don't want to make a deal. Can you think any other possible reasons for them not working with him if he wanted to cooperate?
No, and I think your second observation is the accurate one. I made a comment to yesterday when I was on the air with Walker. He asked me if I thought that it was going to go all the way up to the top. I said, no, there'll be people that get knocked down a peg or two. But, you know, you're not going to see the Clintons go away. You're probably not going to see Comey go away. You're certainly not going to see Obama go away or Valerie Plame or anybody else for that matter. You know, at the end of the day, or Jared rather, Valerie Plame, sorry about that. Sorry, Valerie, Jared, or anybody else for that matter. You know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, because we have a lower class, middle class, upper class, and political class, the political class is outside the realm of justice in this case. They'll get somebody. They'll have to hang somebody from a street post, but it won't be at the highest level. It'll be junior varsity for certain, and that will likely be McCabe.
Well, if I'd have been talking with the Rabbi Eric Walker, I might have suggested that we might have sacrificial grain covered with olive oil. We might even get a dove, but we're not going to get any lambs and certainly not a firstborn son. You know, we're going to get some token sacrificial offerings here is what we're going to get.
Yes, we are.
Just
you're
enough
right.
That they're exactly right. Happy, you know?
You're right. That's it.
Yeah,
that's exactly
I don't know. You know. The damage that has been done and keeps being done to the country with this, I don't know. You know, I think Hannity calls it a two-tiered justice system, and I hate to use Hannity stuff, but I can't think of anything else to call it. I mean, you know, let's have one set of rules for everybody. Otherwise, there's just not much point in anybody wanting to play the game according to their rules. So,
well,
I don't want to
channel Mazie Hirono, but you know we can't have it that way, Clark, because we don't understand. The problem with the Democrat Party is we're so smart we've not been able to convey our messages to the voters, and that's the way a lot of them think. They really are. You know, Walker made the comment yesterday that in order to be the president of the United States, and he's right about this, you have to be pretty egotistical and narcissist. Well. That also applies to many people in D.C. They really do believe they're above the law. And the reason for that is so many of them are lawmakers. They believe it's theirs to manipulate, not the nation. And that's why so many of them are appalled at the idea that they may very well be held accountable by the very laws that they themselves were elected to protect. It's a mindset they cannot get over.
Well, I don't know. We're in a mess. I know that when one side has a set of rules that says they can do anything they need to do to win, and the other side is deathly afraid of offending anybody by calling the other side out, we're in serious trouble. And, you know, you made the comment, that are we going to get to where our electoral process is strictly attack people's moral character? Well, you know, as soon as that's where we are, it's total advantage Democrats.
I agree.
Because they,
you're right.
They have no concern with moral character being assaulted.
No, they don't, because they have no moral character.
There you go.
That's why we have all these genders. That's why we have abortion. That's why we have Planned Parenthood throwing off body parts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. Well, Michael, I'm going to let you get back after it, and I'm going to keep doing what I do.
All right. Thanks, Clark.
Take care.
You too. All right, guys. Quick break. Coming right back on the other side. America's 51st state. What's that all about? And yet again, it's a demonstration of how people on the progressive left are so desirous to usurp the Constitution and the belief of the founding fathers. We'll give you some historical perspective on this edition of the Michael Hart Show. So y'all stick around. We're coming right back on the other side.
Hollow
boy,
oh my God.
Hollow boy, BK boy. This thing is credit, but it's debit. Hit that shorty once and I'll forget it. Big boss, you better recognize. Michael Rick Ross with the curly fries. Sipping Hennessy or dirty Sprite. Doing 180 down the Tom.
Part of America and the Michael Hart Show is brought to you in part by the Unknown America Project. Unknown America, myths and little known oddities about the greatest nation on earth, explores many of the falsehoods and fallacies and revisions in American history that impact the beliefs and the thoughts of many people in this country today. So if you'd like to learn some of the most enduring myths that have been perpetrated on the American public for the last 100 plus years in this country, go check out the book at heartofamerica.net. That's heartofamerica.net. And pick up a copy of Unknown America. It comes out to you absolutely no shipping. It'll be autographed, and we'll even send you a copy of the United States Constitution is our way of saying thanks. So support the Unknown America Project by simply going to theunknownamerica.com, and thank you for your support.
Don't you hate it when your computer is running slow? Did you know that could be a sign of viruses, spyware, or Trojan horses giving hackers access to your private data? Do not let your identity be stolen. Do not let your private documents be made public. Do not let a hacker hold your family photos hostage. Do let the industry-leading security experts at Liberty One Tech ensure that your computer and network are safe. Liberty One Tech will also help secure your online accounts to keep hackers out and make sure you never lose access. It's all free when you join the Talk Text Plus service. With Talk Text Plus, you have unlimited VIP access to expert technology help 7 days a week so that you can always make the right click. Sign up today and get the free security checkup at libertyonetech.com. That's Liberty, the number one, tech.com.
And Michael Hart is the man of this house.
Into history, because this particular initiative has reared its head again. The nation's capital has lined Pennsylvania Avenue with 51-star American flags as the city of D.C. prepares for a hearing on statehood Thursday. Roughly 140 flags were put up by District Mayor Muriel Bowser's office and can be seen down Pennsylvania Avenue lining the space between the White House and the U.S. Capitol. The mayor's official organization put forth a parade Monday morning down the street in the heart of the Capitol. Bowser and military veterans will walk to call on Congress to grant voting rights and full representation to D.C.'s 702 residents, including 30,000 veterans, according to the parade's Eventbrite page on Thursday. The House Oversight and Reform Committee is scheduled to hold a hearing, initially scheduled for July, on a bill proposing statehood for the District of Columbia. The bill seeks to have the city admitted to the Union, this is a quote, by the way, on equal footing with the other states. The bill calls for district-wide elections of two senators and one House representative. It says all district territory would be included in the declaration, except for specific exclusions of federal buildings and monuments, such as the White House. Well, the last full House committee hearing on the statehood bill was in 1993. So why exactly isn't D.C. a state? Well, this is one of those electoral college kind of conversations where too many people do not understand the rationalization, the justification, and the belief of the founding fathers. First, it's worth remembering that D.C. was not always the capital. Washington first took office in New York City, and then the capital was moved to Philly, where it remained for a decade. D.C. was founded as the capital in 1790 as a result of a compromise between Alexander Hamilton and the northern states and Thomas Jefferson and the southern states. Hamilton's economic policies consolidated power in the bankers and financiers who primarily lived in the north, so the compromise moved the capital physically more south to appease Jefferson and southern leaders who feared northern control of the nation. Sounds kind of electoral, doesn't it? Let that sink in. The lack of statehood for the capital is in the Constitution. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 reads, "The Congress shall have the power to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district, not exceeding 10 miles square as may, by cession of particular states and the acceptance of Congress, become the seat of government of the United States," close constitutional quote. James Madison outlined the reason behind this provision in Federalist 43. And again, just in the sense of accuracy, there's no such thing called the Federalist Papers. It's just Federalist. In Federalist 43, calling the arrangement an, quote, "indispensable necessity," Madison wrote, "The indispensable necessity of complete authority at the seat of government carries its own evidence with it. Without it, not only the public authority might be insulated and its proceedings interrupted with impunity, but a dependence of the members of the general government on the state, comprehending the seat of government for protection in the exercise of their duty, might bring on the national councils an imputation of awe or influence equally dishonorable to the government and dissatisfactory to other members of the Confederacy." That is not a reference to the Deep South. In other words, the founders worried that if the capital were to be a state, the members of the government would be unduly beholden to it. Madison envisioned that voting members of a D.C. state would be able to insult or interrupt the proceedings of government to get their way simply by virtue of physical proximity to the halls of power. When the capital was officially moved to D.C., residents lost voting representation in Congress and the Electoral College, as well as a say in constitutional amendments and the right to home rule. Members of the district won a victory in 1961 with the passage of the 23rd Amendment to the Constitution, which did grant them votes in the Electoral College. To this day, D.C. does not have voting representation in Congress, and the federal government maintains jurisdiction over the city. For proponents of D.C. statehood, there's obviously a long way to go. But the point is, they did not want to have politicians that resided in the city to be able to have representation. And if you want to think of it in the sense of almost dual representation of their home state, as well as D.C., as well as D.C. as an independent state. The idea was that D.C. would remain independent to serve the interest of the nation as a whole and not to put the rights of the state ahead of the rights of the government. This is a condition that people have been screaming about for the last several decades. Back to states' rights, back to states' rights. If you grant rights to D.C., then you have politicians within the state, federal politicians, representatives, senators, etc. Where would their loyalty lie? Because now we have the issue of the rights of the state of D.C. being in, potentially in conflict with the rights of the federal government. The founding fathers understood the need of an independent entity, in this case a district. I mean, quite frankly, we don't even really have 50 states. We do have commonwealths in the country as well, but I'm not going to get into that today. But the whole notion here is back to the original statement on what I pointed out earlier was capitulating to the pressures of those that live in the region. The 702,000 residents who are calling on Congress to grant voting rights and full representation to D.C.'s residents. But here's where we start to kind of go astray. The mayor of D.C. wants these people to have representation on a national level. The problem is that the idea of a district was not a matter of keeping them on the sidelines. It was a matter of restricting the access of these people to politicians on a statehood level. The founding fathers, taking a look at this, and here's where it gets interesting, and the Electoral College. They understood the threat of special interest groups, groups that operated solely for the betterment of their own cultural identity as opposed to state or national identity. This is what's going on in this country today, folks, where we have so many people attempting. I mean, think about this for just a second. Let me digress and back up, which, by the way, is redundant. With Hamilton and Jefferson placing the capital in Washington, which was made up of land from Virginia and Maryland, and D.C., by the way, was much larger at one point in time. People in Maryland get kind of pissy about it and wanted their land back. But either way, the idea was to assuage the concerns of the North and the South. And, you know, when we're talking about the South in 1790, we're not talking about Alabama, Mississippi. We're talking about lands south of Virginia. Now, instead of appeasing the concerns of the North and the South, we're appeasing the concerns of the left and the right, the gay and the straight and the straight, the haves, the have-nots, the black and the whites, the pro-guns, the anti-guns, the pro-abortion, the anti-abortion. The founding fathers understood that there would be a period of time where you would have these individualized groups, these groups of influence, minority groups, and I'm not talking culturally, that would be so vested emotionally in their cause that they would be influenceable. I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but the point is that if you're gay, then your desire for gay rights may supersede your loyalty to the nation. If you are pro-gun control, your gun control beliefs might preclude or lead your desire for your service to the nation. Same thing with immigration, open borders. The idea behind DC as being neutral was pretty much based upon the same idea as the Electoral College being neutral and by extension representative of a community and not a person. In both of these examples, the founding fathers did not want certain groups to have undue influence in a region. Now, let's get a, you know, and I don't want to get into necessarily her politics or her religious beliefs, but looking at things and people like Ilhan Omar, who got elected from a district that's predominantly Somali Muslim. Do you think that was just coincidental? Or was that a case of a special interest group in this case coagulated into an area, assembled, if you will, for the purposes of advancing this candidacy? Now, regardless of what you think about Omar, that is exactly the things the founding fathers were concerned about. Taking this into a larger sense, look at the colonies. The reason that so many wanted a centralized government was that the colonists were about to kill each other. We fought about commerce and trade, currency, security. Many of the colonies, you know, some of the colonies did actually have forced religion. There were, and there's a thing you can even Google this if you want to or read it in Unknown America, a thing called the Parsons Cause, which set the amount of money that individual pastors were paid in individual colonies predicated on the price of tobacco of the day. The point is, some of the colonies had the Pennsylvania Dutch, the Catholics were in Maryland, the Baptists were in Georgia, et cetera, et cetera. There was not this embattlement between the colonies, but there was a lot of friction in a lot of cases because they were basically predicated on the idea of individual religious enclaves. As the country continued to grow in power, The founding fathers, and some were in opposition to it, understood there needs to be a centralized government to keep this rabble of colonials all moving in one dedicated, unified direction, that being the country. Had that not happened, had that realization not happened, we never win our independence from George III. Hell, even during that time, you had the regular army, the regular Continental Army, and then you had the militias. So even during the Revolutionary War day, you have these special individualized individual groups that were not necessarily coherent and in concert with what was going on in the national sense. One direction, one people, one governance, and one government to manage and maintain and work as the, if you want to call it an arbitrator in cases of border disputes, et cetera, which happened quite frankly, particularly in the state developing years. This is why you have the Electoral College. This is why you have centralized government in, for all intent and purposes, a neutral place where the people that serve government serve the federal government and don't put the state city first. Because the founding fathers, and they knew this from the colonial days, the founding fathers understood that when individual groups, in this case the colonies, but today's special interest, put their own interest in front of the interest of moving the nation forward, that we would ultimately pay the price of division. And we're seeing that in this country today, are we not? Can you imagine for one moment D.C. being its own state? See, it puts its own needs first in that respect. Because the individual states want to put their own, and they should. But that's counterintuitive to centralized government. In other words, they have no dog in the fight, so to speak, from a federalist perspective. Do we really want a House of Representatives or a Senate where D.C. is doing the same battle with the rest of the nation over its own desires and needs and goals and future and people? And it's doing so first, as opposed to its responsibility to the nation as a whole. How does that work? This has been tried before, like I said, back in the 1990s. And it fell flat on its face. Because we cannot put the representation of these 700,000 people in D.C. above the representation of the rest of the nation. We also have to remember that the founding fathers didn't just sit around and cobble out the Constitution one Sunday afternoon over a beer. They studied generations of previous attempts at democracies or republics, consuming volumes of books about the things that had gone wrong. They looked at the writings of de Tocqueville and others, and they considered everything in the past, because in the past, every democracy in the history of the world, to the degree that they were democratic, had failed. Because when individual organizations or people or special interest groups work on their own best interests first, the whole suffers. For all the talk about 1619, etc., had Jamestown, had the residents of Jamestown and other settlements, and there were many others, had they not worked in fluidity or concert with one another, they never would have made it through the long winters. So as I wrap things up today, I want to make certain that I'm very clear about something here. From a historical perspective, special interest groups, whether they be related to immigration, or healthcare, or abortion, or progressives, or liberals, or so, whatever the case, special interest groups are as much a threat to the republic and always have been as the individuals that populate them. In this nation moving forward, we are always designed and developed and founded on the idea of moving in one common direction. When individual groups become tribal and put their own best interests first, the whole suffers. And it's always been that way. And democracy after democracy after democracy throughout the history of the world has proven that. That's why we have a centralized government in D.C. that does not have statehood, that does not have representation, because the founding fathers understood the immense need of neutrality without the appearance of a sovereignty that may very well precede the needs of the nation. It's why we have an electoral college. It's why we have a representative form of government. And it's why this particular initiative, like it did in 93, will surely fail. But that will not prevent the great unwashed, the great unknowing, and those with a complete lack of history from continuing to advance these notions as they kiss ass and they suck up to voters with the hopes of creating some kind of initiative that they can hang their legacy around and hopefully get themselves reelected time and time again, and the country be damned, because at the end of the day, what's best for America, in their opinion, is not necessarily what's best for them, their special interest groups, and they're more desirous of their own personal gain than what's best for the nation as a whole. That's it for us. We'll be back with you soon. You're listening to The Michael Hart Show right here on the Heart of America Broadcasting Network. Please check out heartofamerica.net. Check out a copy of the book, Unknown America. You'd know a lot of these things if you bought a copy of the book. For those of you that are Amazon Kindle, you can download it over there. It's a couple bucks to download the darn thing. If you do the monthly thing over at Amazon, it's free. Or you can go over to theunknownamerica.com, theunknownamerica.com. I'll send you a copy of it. No shipping. We'll autograph it, even send you a copy of the Constitution so you can irritate your liberal friends. So go check that over at theunknownamerica.com. You can listen to the Michael Hart Show. We'll be back with you very, very soon. We appreciate you tuning in, and we'll talk to you on the other side.
Be back.